we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm your host, Nurse Jody O'Malley. In last week's episode, I spoke with Kimberly Overton, founder of Nurse Freedom Network. And together, her and I broke down the four principles of ethics for nurses. We did this so the community, you the listener, would know what to expect from your nurses. We talk about ethics all the time, but for many people, they don't know what that is. And quite frankly, I feel like through COVID, nurses forgot that they signed up to be a nurse and adhere to the ethical principles of nursing. They are autonomy, which is recognizing each individual patient's right to self-determination and decision-making. They are supposed to know all potential risks, benefits, and complications to make well-informed decisions. We are primarily, number one, the advocate for the patient. And we are the liaison between the medical team and that patient. And nurses have to advocate for a patient despite the wishes being verbalized by the medical team if they don't agree with them. We are there to honor autonomy. There's also beneficence, which is acting for the good and welfare of others, and their actions guided by compassion. And we broke that down for you. You know, it's compassionately treating patients. Throughout COVID, we did not do that. We removed the advocate from the bedside. We did not have any early treatment options. We told people to go home, that they might be infected with a disease that can kill them, but to come back when that disease was actually killing them. And then we're going to treat you with another experimental drug called remdesivir that had a financial incentive for the hospital administrators to make the doctors push it, which was so unethical. There's also justice. And that is, you know, that we have to care for people and have the same level of fairness in all medical decisions and nursing care. And the most well-known, non-maleficence, which is to do no harm. And all of the unscientific policies and mandates that were being pushed on society caused more harm than good. Everybody should have to, well, I shouldn't say everybody should have to, but we all naturally perform risk versus benefit analysis. And for many people, they felt as though they would rather run the risk of contracting COVID and getting over it than signing up to be in an experimental injection campaign, because we can't even call it a vaccine, guys. I mean, a vaccine, you know, is supposed to prevent illness and sickness. This did not do this. And it was clear from the jump. I mean, from January of 2021, we knew that the vaccine was failing because people were still coming in with COVID. And so it didn't prevent them from getting it. It didn't prevent them from giving it. And it didn't prevent hospitalization and death. And quite frankly, anybody who's coming out and saying that this vaccine is safe and effective are not adhering to ethical principles, because we cannot, in good conscience, say that it's safe. Because so many people are suffering injuries, so many people are dying from it, right? I mean, everybody knows. I mean, there's SADs out there now. sudden adult death syndrome in 2022? My God, what has happened to the medical community is just mind-blowing to me. So Nurse Kimberly was my co-host, and I absolutely loved having her. So she's coming back today. She's a registered nurse in Hendersonville, Tennessee, with a background in critical care and telehealth nursing. In July of 2021, she founded the Nurse Freedom Network to stand against the medical tyranny we are now facing. She's a graduate of Western Kentucky University and has worked in healthcare for over 25 years, both at the bedside and as administrator. She has a true passion for providing patient-centered care that focuses on empowering individuals through information and education. She's a strong advocate for autonomy and informed consent. And she also serves on the board of directors for the National Coalition of Frontline Workers. So, in this segment, we are going to break down for you the nine provisions of the Nursing Code of Ethics. Okay, so we're going to bust it out for you. We're going to break it down, and we are going to show you what you deserve from your nurse. And hopefully, nurses hear this podcast or hear this radio show, and they are reminded of the oath that they took. Welcome, Kimberly. Thank you for joining me again.
Thank you for having me back. Appreciate
Yes, I love it. I love it. So, everyone, listen, turn up the volume if you're in your car, grab a drink, sit down, because we are going to unpack these nine main provisions. Kimberly, you want to start?
Yeah, so let's start with number one. A nurse practices with compassion and respect for the inherent dignity, worth, and unique attributes of every person.
That's right. Compassion. Compassion. Do you think we lacked compassion through COVID?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep,
Absolutely.
absolutely.
We weren't even letting, patients have family and advocates at their bedside.
Right.
Providing compassionate care.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe it would be good for people to understand like how important the role of the advocate is at the bedside. You know, they're another set of eyes, ears, and hands for the nurse.
Yes, and I can tell you that we missed having the extra eyes and hands and ears at the bedside. And so many, a lot of times it just kept the patient calm. When they don't have an advocate, you're in a highly stressful situation, especially in the ICU. People are scared. They don't have anybody at their side, and throughout the pandemic, it was very difficult to even get the nurse in the room. So they were completely isolated and alone in a strange place under a stressful situation. And allowing that to happen to me is not showing compassion. And I truly feel like, and I said this last week, that as nurses, we should have done more to stop this. And the very moment they told us that our patients could not have an advocate at their side was the moment that we as nurses should have stood up and said, no, we're not doing this.
That's right. We should have given education to that advocate and said, okay, listen, you run the risk of contracting COVID. Do you assume that risk to be at the bedside? And if they said yes, we could give them the mask and then move on with our lives, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Why didn't we do that? That is so huge for me because, people have to understand, like the nurse typically has five or six patients. So Kimberly worked in ICU where it's the critical of the most critical patients in the hospital that are there. I worked as a flow pool nurse. So when I would show up to work, they would tell me, we need you in the ED. We need you as hospital supervisor. We need you in the ICU. And I can't tell you how many patients just were distraught and their level of anxiety would go up knowing that they were coming into a hospital and they were leaving their family member at the car, at the drop-off. Yeah. It was so sad, because for me, with the Native Americans, they were the highest risk population in this country, and they suffered more death than anyone. And many family members, you know, when they would drop off that patient, that was the last time they saw them. Wow. I mean, we could have a whole episode on just that. So number two, the nurse's primary commitment is to the patient, whether an individual, family, group, community, or population. I didn't read hospital administrator in there, did you?
No, and I didn't read hospital protocol either, no.
Oh, no, no. Patient.
P is for patient, not protocol.
Ooh, I like that. That's right. P is for patient, not protocol. P is for patient, not paycheck.
Yes, yes, amen.
I mean, this was my reason for blowing the whistle, because I was witnessing safety signals, and that would warrant a more in-depth look at this so-called vaccine, and nobody was paying attention to it. Nobody. I would even ask, and I would have to, you know, go down that line of questioning with the doctor in the room, because they didn't ask. And I would say, were you vaccinated recently? And they were like, yeah, today. And mm-hmm. I'd look at the doctor and be like, huh, you think you might have wanted to ask that question?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
That was kind of how that line of questioning was either dismissed or with vaccination status. Like, you weren't considered fully vaccinated until 2 weeks after your second dose. So anything that happens couldn't have been related to the vaccine, because, you know, they weren't fully vaccinated. So,
oh, yes, exactly. They probably went on with that narrative for a good, 6 months, would you say?
Yes, at least.
At least it would be like, oh, well, they should have gotten it sooner.
And then when they would get COVID in that window, you know, that just counts as one more unvaccinated case of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Had a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
We could really go down that whole rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode, Jody.
that's the admissions, the BS admissions of people that were there for obvious reasons other than COVID, and because of the faulty PCR testing, because you don't PCR test on asymptomatic people, which means people that have no symptoms. So they came in with a groin abscess. Obviously, they're not there for COVID. Obviously. But yes, that's a whole, I mean, we could have a whole show on that.
Yeah.
And you left the bedside too, because your primary commitment was to the patient, individual, family, group, community, and population. And you walked away. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I walked away from the bedside because I became uncomfortable with the protocols that they were using, specifically the remdesivir, which we've long known has been harmful to patients, and it has oftentimes been deadly to patients. You know, it's a medication that is very costly. It's about $3,000 for a 5-day dose of this medication that is typically and largely ineffective. Interestingly enough, the World Health Organization recommends against its use because it doesn't work. So I had to start asking myself, you know, why are we using this medication that is clearly doing more harm than good? And, you know, the bigger question, why is the government financially incentivizing its use? That was my bigger question. But yeah. I just couldn't watch, you know, I could not continue to watch these patients die needlessly. Not when I knew that there was treatment available, there was FDA approved safe therapeutics, and those patients were being denied these medications. They were being denied these treatments and placed on an antiviral medication, an ineffective antiviral medication that was in many cases killing them.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, you even, you know, look at the remdesivir breakdown, and if it does have any efficacy, it's early stages. Right. Well, remember, we weren't treating people early. We were telling them, wait till you are actively dying by shortness of breath to come back in. And by then, the virus had already replicated and was taking over their body and causing all kinds of blood clots, because that's what the spike protein does.
Exactly. And they're telling them to come in. Now, the time they get to us in the hospital, you know, already several days into the symptomatic phase, so it's too late for an antiviral to be effective. So why would we be doing this? And I just kept asking this question over and over again. And I'm like, why are we doing this? Why are we not treating these patients with that? Again, therapeutics that even if they did not help, would not have done any harm. Why were we not throwing everything that we had at this virus, at this novel virus that we knew nothing about? We should have been throwing the kitchen sink at it.
Exactly. And thankfully, we did have some physicians and nurse practitioners that did do that. You know, McCullough came up with the McCullough protocol. Dr. Zelenko came up with the Zelenko protocol. Dr. Corey, Dr. Merrick, and the frontline critical care doctors came up with the FLCCC protocol. You know, and then we have the American frontline doctors that came up with the protocol.
Yeah. 18,000 doctors, more than 18,000 doctors have come out in support of early treatment against COVID-19, and they are labeled as misinformation.
Yeah, they're fringe. They're a fringe group.
They're fringe, 18,000 fringe. And as I love to point out, I love Dr. Richard Urso. I think he is an amazing and incredible physician, and he's fantastic. And as he pointed out, on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., 18,000 doctors is more than the NIH, the CDC, or the FDA.
Yeah. And none of them, you guys, should have came in the middle of the physician-patient relationship.
Exactly.
So
Number three, the nurse promotes, advocates for, and protects the rights, health, and safety of the patient. Has that been happening?
No. I mean, it was a one-size-fits-all, right?
Oh, a shot in every arm.
A shot in every arm. Yes, shot in every arm.
Healthcare is suddenly, you know, it's a one-size-fits-all thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Shot in every arm.
Right. You know, we didn't protect their rights. That we violated the patient's Bill of Rights to being prayed over, to having an advocate at the bedside, which is the eyes, ears, and hands of the nurse that's taking care of, you know, 5-6 other patients, sometimes even more than that. And the health, like we said, we didn't care about the health. We didn't do absolutely anything. There was no public service announcements, mass media campaigns for food is medicine.
Vitamin C, vitamin D.
Yep. I mean, all we needed to say is, listen, this is an inflammatory disease. This affects your body and creates inflammation. So at least stay away from sugar, guys.
Yeah. And why are we not talking about getting, I mean, this is what we should be focusing on, is getting ourselves into optimal immune health, because that is what is going to protect us moving forward against this or any other virus that's going to come along. This is not the last virus we're going to see. I mean, and that's the other thing, you know, I've said from the beginning, nothing made sense. And we've long known that our bodies, we need exposure to viruses and bacteria. These are literally the building blocks of our immune system. That's immunology 101, right? But all of a sudden, we're told that we need to mask everywhere that we go. You know, we can't breathe air. It's just absolutely ridiculous. We can have no exposure whatsoever to viruses and bacteria. Since when has this been a thing?
Never. Never. You know, it's just like when they shut down the schools, and then here in Arizona, they were like, okay, we're going to go back to school in the summer of 2021. And then all of a sudden, they were like, oh no, there's COVID outbreaks. There's COVID outbreaks. And it's like, come on, guys, we know we just isolated our children for 5 months. Now they're coming back to school, and every parent knows that when a child returns to school, they get sick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we've isolated everybody. What happens when we isolate? Our immune systems, they tank. That lowers our immune response.
Right. Yeah, because we're all like using tequila smelling hand sanitizer.
Exactly.
I mean, it was though, right?
No, you're right. You're 100% right.
It's like, oh my gosh, are people just making this? Like it just was so overwhelming, that tequila smelling hand
It
sanitizer.
really was. I remember patient comment was like, well, they've been drinking. It was the middle of the day. I'm like, oh, it's the hand sanitizer. Sorry.
Oh my
I
goodness.
wasn't judging.
I'm not judging, right? That's one thing that we did do a lot. We judge people. We judge them for coming in and kind of freaking out, because they had anxiety over this. But we created the anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We've been creating this fear, and it's driving all of this COVID insanity that we've been seeing. You know, patients, can you remember when the patients were just tripping over themselves to go because they had like a sniffle and they were tripping over themselves to go get COVID tested? What is that positive test? If you're sick and you think you have COVID, just stay home. Just stay home because there's no treatment anyway, right?
Well, exactly.
What are you tripping over yourself to get in line and stand in line for like, 5 hours to get a COVID swab? It just, none of it made any sense to me. And I just had to sit back and almost just laugh or cry. I didn't know which.
Well, exactly. And one of our sponsors is COVID RX, and
Oh,
when they
yes, I
came.
they that helped me very much through my COVID.
Absolutely.
Mental.
This is the one thing that we could have done to prevent it. Bangladesh did it. They pretty virtually wiped out COVID by just giving them antiviral that they sniff up their nose when they go out, or they're starting to feel sick. And I love it. I love it.
I continue to use it. After my COVID, I continue to use it because all of that stuff, as it's in living in your nares, and we've got to get it out of there.
Right. We'll be right back, guys. We're gonna unpack the rest of it with you.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold, too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Now the spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
welcome back. Thank you for joining us. We are on number 4 of 9 provisions of the Nursing Code of Ethics. So number 4, Kimberly.
All right, the nurse has authority, accountability, and responsibility for nursing practice, makes decisions, and takes action consistent with the obligation to provide optimal patient care.
Oh, wait, hold on a second. Did you say we have authority?
Yes. Imagine that.
Wow. I think we forgot that as a profession.
We've talked about autonomy for patients, but you know, like, let's talk about our autonomy and our authority that we have as a nurse, which is a very independent, autonomous position.
Mm-hmm. Because we operate under our own nursing license.
Right.
So if a physician tells or writes an order for anything, we, under our license, have to make sure that it is safe. It's the right medication, the right dose, the right route, the right treatment. We have to know all of that, guys. And I don't think, you know, the population at large really understands that. You know, for so long it's been, you know, the nurses, you know, the arm of the doctor. And in some ways they are, but in many instances, we're also the mind of the doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had to, you know, we have to know and be educated. I've heard people and nurses even, and this is what's frightening to me, make comments. You know, I've seen the comments on social media that it's not their job to know these things, you know, except that it is literally our job to know these things. Our first priority is to be able to provide adequate, competent, and safe care to our patients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to understand it's an enormous responsibility that's before us, but we are their last line of defense in many cases. And I remember I said this last week about how a good nurse can save you from a bad doctor, mm-hmm. but no one can save you from a bad nurse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, if anything, we could save it from a bad nurse by, you know, being accountable and understanding what's going on in the unit. So yeah. A nurse works in a unit and they really need to have a pulse on every single patient that is on that unit. They need to understand who they need to watch out for, who's the most critical on the floor. Who's the patient that is going to take away that nurse's time by saying having to deliver wound care or ostomy care or trach care? And they're going to be in that room with the patient for a certain length of time. So we have to be aware and alert that when those call bell lights go off and that we know that nurse is going to be hung up for a little bit, we have got to understand what's going on with that other patient, absolutely. At least on a basic level of understanding so that we can intercede.
Absolutely. You know, team nursing is a big thing. I can't stand the mentality of, well, that's not my patient. And, you know, like you said, we should at least be, you know, knowing the code status of every patient on the unit.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to easily look at that and make ourselves aware of who on the floor is a full code, who on the floor is a DNR. And we've got to be having each other's back as nurses. And there's so much of that doesn't happen. You know, it doesn't happen as much as it should. And that's unfortunate because the only people that we suffer as nurses and our patients suffer. It's just more toxicity and I don't understand it.
I don't understand it. You're right. It was the nursing cliques and mm-hmm. the nurse bullying, because let me tell you something, you know, you think that, you know, our children have a hard time with bullying and growing up. I mean, it doesn't get any better because those little jerks that you dealt with as a kid, now they're grown up.
And they're all nurses. No, sir. Just kidding.
No, but you do. You get a lot of them that start having complexes. And when we work in these critical areas, you know, let's just say the ER nurse and the ICU nurse or even, you know, the nurse from the surgery department, right? The PACU nurse, they come up with their chest puffed out because yes, we do save people, you know, and we'll look at the, you know, med surge nurse and be like, yeah, they don't know. They don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of that. And that's, I've really never understood the mentality. And I was one of the nurses that actually cringed whenever they started with the healthcare heroes stuff. I didn't like it.
I hated it.
I mean, just, it was cringeworthy. You know, this was our job. This is what we do. This is what we do all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't need the fanfare or the extra calories.
True that.
But we didn't need all of that because look how quickly they ripped it away.
Right. I mean, it was just
zero.
Mm-hmm. Propaganda messaging from the jump.
Exactly.
From the jump. And people bought into it. And then, you know, yeah, it was unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously providing optimal patient care, that went to the wayside. Uh-huh. And it was tragic to see.
Yeah, none of the stuff that we would regularly and routinely do for our patients, you know, that kind of stuff stopped happening. Were we ambulating these patients as much as we needed to be?
Nope.
Of course not, because they had us like clustering our care, which I get that, but you know, it's like they didn't want us in the room. They didn't want us ambulating these patients. And what happens when we don't ambulate our patients? They lie in the bed and then they are going to throw blood clots.
That's right. They run the risk of blood clots. They run the risk of muscle wasting. Yep. They, that's right. Like most of these patients didn't even know if it was day or night because they were in the room isolated.
Yep.
We couldn't walk them because if we brought a COVID patient out on the floor to walk, that was inappropriate, even if they had a mask on.
Yeah. Couldn't do it.
Wrong. So wrong.
It was tragic. And we couldn't get anybody on the floor. It was only the nurses. That's how it was at my hospital. No PT, physical therapy, never came up. The physicians would barely come to the floor. If they did come to the floor, they might come to the door, peek in the glass. We had the fishbowl rooms and they would peek in the door and like do their assessment that way. I don't know how you can assess a patient from a doorway, but it was only the nurses that were on the floor.
Yep, only the nurses that were on the floor. I agree with that. I can attest to that. Doctors were getting reports from nurses over the phone. And then you could look at their chart notes. And at the bottom, it said, report received from nurse due to lessening COVID exposure.
Mm-hmm. Well, our doctors would say, well, we're just trying to save the PPE for you. They made it about that they cared about the nurses and wanted to reserve all of that PPE and the masks and gowns for the nurses. That's why they come to the rooms.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Number five, the nurse owes the same duties to self as to others, including the responsibility to promote health and safety, preserve wholeness of character and integrity, maintain competence, and continue personal and professional growth.
Well, let's just start with saying that isn't happening anywhere.
Not at all.
And hasn't for who? I mean, that predates COVID. You know, that predates COVID. Nurses are not known for taking the best care of ourselves. That's for sure.
That's right. And when we say nurses owes the same duty to self as to others, that would be honoring autonomy. We mm-hmm. have our own right to choose. And we did. We chose to go to the hospital with no PPE or little PPE in the beginning when this was a novel virus and we had no idea what we were expecting. We went to work and we went throughout this pandemic. And then you're looking at almost 2 years later, right? From February to when do most of these mandates kick in to get the jab or lose your job?
It was July. That's when I started Nurse Freedom Network, was July of 2021.
Okay. So 2021, now all of a sudden we're dispensable and you have to take this injection, and we know it's not going to prevent you from stopping it, because they talked about breakthrough infection. CDC talked about breakthrough infection, which was really vaccine failure.
Exactly.
But still yet we worked throughout the pandemic. We saw that the vaccine was failing, and still yet we are supposed to choose our paycheck because you're going to mandate us to take the jab that we know it doesn't even work.
Yeah. And not only do we know it doesn't work, you know, we see it failing everywhere, but for many of us, we were also seeing firsthand, we were seeing the injuries, the side effects that you can't discount and say that this isn't related to the jab. I mean, we would have people coming in 2 days post-vaccine with, you know, the weakness, lower extremity weakness. And then I had a patient that today he's paralyzed from his chest down. That was one of the last patients that I ever took care of. And that was due to the vaccine. So we were already starting to see the safety signals.
Oh, absolutely. We were losing people left and right that worked there, girl, that worked there. We had, I think, three, and I work in a small hospital. We had two or three housekeepers mm-hmm. that passed away, nurses passed away. A young girl that I worked with was in her mid-20s, just got married, was about to start having children. She was super excited. She took the jab and now she has cardiac issues, and she was away from the bedside. She was away from the hospital working for months. And then when we brought her in, when she came back to work, she had to have another nurse working with her in case, something happened with her heart and she had issues.
Yeah. Awful. I mean, I've seen it so much. And then, you know, even if it's not anything that's obvious, like a cardiac or anything like that, but we're just seeing people that are saying, oh, I've just never been this sick before. I'm the sickest I've ever been. I started seeing so many cases of adult tonsillitis, adult appendicitis, things you don't really see as common, GI bleeds in populations you would not expect to see them in. So. Yep. It was just odd, all of these things that we were seeing. And so many were just like not connecting the dots at all. And the cancers.
Oh, the yeah.
Aggressive cancers that we're seeing coming up. And then it's like, oh, they're perfectly healthy. And then all of a sudden they're in like stage 4.
Yeah.
And pass very quickly.
Well, and that's right. And they had been in remission for more than 5 years, which should have, you know, given them a clean bill of health. I mean, how about the women that hadn't bled in years that started getting their periods again?
Yeah, we would have been fighting for that. I'm telling you right now. that's awful. I mean, it's happened. I saw somebody last night making this comment. That they were postmenopausal and they hadn't had a period for several years, and all of a sudden they got the jab and now they are having bleeding again.
You know how pissed I'd be if I went through menopause. I suffered through menopause.
I was like, no, it's been 2 years. Let me tell you, no, thank you.
Oh my gosh. And then all of a sudden I got my period again. Oh my goodness. But that's the thing. It's like we were injecting the toxic spike protein, which studies were showing very early on that it was bioavailable, which meant that spike protein could just go into any organ, any system, and wreak havoc on it. I mean, it even crosses the blood-brain barrier. you know? And so then we have these neurologic symptoms.
All of these things that we were seeing, you know, and we're just supposed to pretend that they, that couldn't have anything to do, you know, with this. These perfectly healthy individuals, you know, don't just start, I mean, 20-year-olds just don't start having heart attacks. These young athletes that are collapsing on you know, on the fields, this is not normal.
No.
And they are definitely attempting to normalize this type of thing.
Well, they absolutely are. Yeah, they're normalizing all of it. They're saying all of it is normal. You know, sudden adult death, children, you know, dying, you know, in their sleep, and it's yeah. So I mean, we're supposed to be competent. It says maintain competence. We weren't maintaining competence. We were being puppets to the protocols.
Exactly. It's like we lost all of our competence, all of our logic and reasoning, our ability to question anything, because it was outside of a protocol. And I just, you know, all of these nurses that continued, and with, you know, what was the thing we heard all the time when we would question the vaccines, or when we would say, talk about early treatment and anything like that. What is the one thing that these nurses, they had no leg to stand on, but the one thing that they would always say, follow the science, follow the science.
Oh my gosh. Or how about Fauci? I am the science.
I am the science. Exactly. But you know, when we're thinking about, you know, what the system, like how many years, but pre-COVID even, like nurses have been complaining about how broken this system is for decades. The staffing, right? Oh, we don't have safe staffing. We've known for years that hospitals have placed profits over patients every time, right? That's proven to be true in all my years of experience.
Yep. Working,
I'm sure in yours as well. But it's just fascinating to me, because some of those very same nurses that demand that we just all implicitly follow the science, it's that's being touted by the same broken system.
Yeah.
This same system we claim is unsafe and we don't trust it and it's awful and it's horrible, but they follow the science of this same system that no question, no discussion, just blind allegiance to a narrative, that to a system we confess not to even trust or have any faith in whatsoever.
No, not anymore. And the ironic thing was, we were not following the science, because the science told us that masks don't work, that social distancing doesn't work, that we don't quarantine people, that we don't stop them from providing a livelihood for their families. All of that was so unscientific and against public health policy 101.
Exactly.
We'll be right back.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud. HealthyCell.com, code out loud.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
We'll be right back. All right, we have unpacked a lot here, but we still have four more to go. All right, so number six, the nurse, through individual and collective effort, establishes, maintains, and improves the ethical environment of the work setting and conditions of employment that are conducive to safe, quality healthcare. Improves the ethical environment. Wow. Well, I tried to do that.
Yeah, I think there were a few of us. I won't say many. I don't think there were enough of us that were doing that.
And why not? Why do you think that is?
You know, I actually did a whole thing on this, like where I felt like, you know, as nurses, we do have that tendency to compartmentalize, you know, because our jobs, just the high stress nature of our jobs, we have that tendency. It's a defense mechanism, right? So we do that. So I had to start thinking, is it just that they're not seeing what's happening? I don't know. I think that it's a theory. It's a theory, you know, that maybe it's because they're compartmentalizing and they're just not seeing it. Maybe they need to remove themselves from that situation. I feel like I didn't even start to have my eyes fully opened until I was outside of that environment. I pray that that's the reason, because I'd hate to think that we're just at this point where we've become so apathetic that we don't care to question, or we're just only worried about our paycheck and just kind of keeping our head down and doing our job and following orders when patients are dying.
Yeah, I think it had to do with the political nature that people allowed to happen and for this virus. And because it wasn't healthcare, it wasn't science, it was political. And, you know, if anybody spoke up and said, you know, this doesn't seem right, it would be like, oh, what? Because you're a Trump supporter?
Oh, exactly. And, you know, politicization of healthcare was the death of it, because the one thing that should never, I mean, I am very, you know, opinionated and I have my own sets of beliefs and that's totally fine. We all do. But the one thing I never did was I never brought my politics to the bedside, because it didn't have anything to do with the care that I was providing. And we should never be basing our care on somebody's political beliefs or if they think differently than we do. But, you know, none of the positions that I hold as it relates to the vaccine, to the pandemic, none of those have anything at all to do with my political positions, but they have everything to do with logic and reasoning.
Logic and reasoning, common sense, critical thinking.
That has nothing to do with my political position. Regardless of my political affiliation, it's the logic and it's the reasoning. Like, if you can make it make sense, then I will give you some credit. If you can't make any of this make sense, then you know, there's just no hope for whatever they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I think because of the propaganda messaging, they made this a polarizing subject, and they took away people's ability to speak up. Like they censored us. They censored scientific discourse. We could not even have a debate about it, because people that allowed fear to take hold of them stopped critically thinking. They reacted on an emotional level. And anytime I tried to have a conversation, you know, a scientific debate, a scientific inquiry, it always became an emotional topic. And I'm like, leave your emotions out of this, guys. Bring the facts to me. Here's my facts. Here's the N95 box. It's telling us on here that it filters with 95% efficacy particles that are 0.3 microns or higher. Did you even research the size of a coronavirus?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but honestly, I mean, you're right. Critical thinking, just, it went out. it went out the window entirely. It's like people have just lost their ability. And I've tried to debate, and I've said it many times, I would debate any nurse, any physician, you know, just let's have a conversation. And nothing, nobody will bring it to the table because they don't have a leg to stand on.
Mm-hmm. They don't have a leg to stand on, and it would always come back emotional. And mm-hmm. for me and my environment, you know, working with the Native Americans that were dying at much higher rates than any other population in this country, they had seen a lot of death. They had a lot of their family members. I mean, you would be hard pressed to find one Native American that didn't lose at least one family member throughout this last 2 years. Not one. And so, you know, you have to, you know, be empathetic to that. And when we're having discussion, you know, and about the mass, say that they would be like, well, it's better than nothing. And it's like, no, honey, actually it's not. It's harming you and it's harming your children. We are creating a society of children that think that they're going to kill grandma by breathing on them.
Right. And I could never understand this concept of like they're jabbing these babies. They are jabbing these babies. They're masking these babies to protect grandma. And in what moral society are we taking our children? And like if we were in an area with a mass shooter, do we pick up our children and hold them in front of us as shields? Or do we do everything we can to protect the children in a moral society?
Exactly. I would say that all the time. We never in the history of the world used our children as shields to protect the elderly. And when you break down the numbers, I mean, I was following the numbers every day. And, you know, it you look at the children from 0 to 18 that died with the COVID. There's actually, I don't think one of them. You know, all right, maybe that's like a bold statement.
It's a 99.9815% survival rate for these children.
So
zero risk, virtually zero risk of death from COVID.
So statistically, zero.
Zero.
And we're injecting them now. And we have absolutely zero clue of the long-term side effects. I mean, we were injecting pregnant women. We never.
They won't even take a Tylenol. I mean, they won't eat deli meat.
They won't eat deli meat.
I can't change a litter box.
Oh my goodness, girls. Yes, they won't. Oh God.
All of these things you don't do with pregnant women. I'll tell you, I have lost so much respect for those physicians, those OBGYNs, and you know, all of them, who all of a sudden like, yeah, get this job. It's safe and effective. You know, I hope that their consequences come swiftly.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not safe, nor is it effective. And how they ever said this, it's criminal. It's criminal what they're doing to these babies.
Yep.
You know, I mean, to inject these babies in the absence of safety data, again, negligible risk. It's just insane and it should be criminal.
We were pulling babies away from their mother at birth.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. It's mind blowing. Yeah. It's mind blowing. All right. So number seven, the nurse in all roles and settings advances the profession through research and scholarly inquiry, professional standards development, and the generation of both nursing and health policy.
I don't think there's very much inquiring going on at all.
And are they researching?
No.
They're repeating. They're puppets repeating what the headlines say.
The CDC said, Dr. Fauci said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Fauci is the science, so.
That's right. Uh-huh. Number eight, the nurse collaborates with other health professionals and the public to protect human rights, promote health diplomacy, and reduce health disparities. Do we do that?
I don't think so. I don't think that, you know, we were protecting, well, many of them were not even protecting their own human rights, you know, being coerced into getting a shot that they didn't want. And they certainly weren't protecting their patients' right to choose a medical intervention or whether or not they wanted a medical intervention.
Nope. And we weren't collaborating with anyone. We were being told by hospital administration what we had to do.
Yep.
And so no collaboration was occurring. I mean, I didn't see any collaboration of the industrial hygienists on the floor who are the ones who protect us in for safety, right? They're the pandemic preparedness people. They were in a rounding on the floor. Nobody was saying to create circulation, ventilation. There was nothing in our HVAC systems that they were putting in to try to eliminate viruses. That's all they needed to do was put something into the HVAC system.
That's too easy. Stop trying to make sense.
I mean, literally, we could talk an hour on each one of these.
I know.
Number 9, you want to hit that last one?
Yes. The profession of nursing, collectively through its professional organization, must articulate nursing values, maintain the integrity of the profession, and integrate principles of social justice into nursing and health policy.
Well, I think, Kimberly, that's a good segue for what you did, what you created, how you stepped up and took the reins on this and said, I cannot be a part of this system. I cannot tell people that it's safe and effective. And you didn't like what was happening with the nursing community. So you're developing your own professional organization.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I had to leave the bedside again because of the protocols and watching these patients die. And, you know, for a while I started doing telephone triage nursing from home. And, you know, for a while that worked for me until it didn't, because, you know, they wanted again to use these words, it's safe and effective. They wanted me to encourage parents to vaccinate their children and to use the word safe and effective when we found them to be anything but this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had been exempted from the mandates. Now, I'm not vaccinated, in case you hadn't figured that out yet. I'm not vaccinated. I was exempted prayerfully, but I ended up resigning my position because I could not in good conscience recommend this vaccine to these children. I just couldn't do it.
I didn't run any risk, I don't think, of not being an employee there. They gave me my own schedule that I wanted, because I was such an asset. So I had the foresight to get the exemption for the flu vaccine in the year prior. And so I didn't run any risk of having to be forced into it. But again, you know, I didn't step out of this system for me. And I know you didn't do it for you. We did it for humanity.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, people ask me this all of the time, like, why are you doing this? You know, and I always say I felt very led and very called to do it. But what is the alternative? You know, I didn't necessarily do it with myself. I could have stayed in my job. I could have stayed in my job and worked as a triage nurse and collected my paycheck and kept my head down. But I mean, I can't, the alternative is unthinkable to me.
You know, guys, thank you so much for joining us. I hope that you reach out. We want to hear your thoughts on the show. We want to hear your concerns and certainly want to hear what's ailing you. What do you want us to break down and talk about? Because certainly, you know, giving this platform on America Out Loud to speak uncensored is a godsend, and it's God inspired and it's God led. Thank you for joining us on America Out Loud Pulse. Always a beat ahead.